Well, if you, like me, watched the State of the Union address last night, you saw that many issues were covered. What we'll be looking at this hour is how many concerns specific to women were touched on and whether they were touched on sufficiently. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We have with us Government Relations Manager for the American Association of University Women, Anne Hedgepeth, and the AAUW put out a pretty cute and effective, I think, way to listen to or watch the State of the Union address. They had bingo cards that were specifically geared towards women's issues, and so it was a great aid and tool for listening and watching and seeing how prominent or not women's issues were. So, Anne Hedgepeth, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Judith. I'm really glad to be here and to talk to you all a little bit more about some of the things that came up and some of the things that were missed, and maybe what we can expect going forward following the State of the Union address last night.
I think that's a perfect summary of what I'm hoping to do, too, and we'll certainly welcome our listeners to join in as well. We are broadcasting out of Madison this week, so you can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on the Facebook page. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And Anne, you know, there were a whole lot of issues that the AAUW included on the bingo cards. I think there were 23 or 24 total. And certainly not all of them were addressed in the State of the Union, but I'm guessing that you figured that would be the case. Going into the address, what were you specifically hoping to hear from President Obama about women's issues?
You know, I think that we had identified that there was a lot of room for him to use the bully pulpit to talk about issues that impact women and families, and that would include things that he could do and things that Congress could do. And so we had been hoping specifically to see issues around pay equity and equal pay, not only the legislation that's out there, the Paycheck Fairness Act, but also things that he could do. We were looking for him to connect the dots around education, job training, how that impacts workers, how we can make our education system work better for students. That's both by doing things like addressing bullying and harassment in schools and also making sure that college is affordable and accessible. A lot of those things you'll see were buzzwords that those bingo cards identified because we had been hoping and putting out there that these were priorities, I think, for a lot of women across the country.
And you did mention equal pay, and we do have a clip of what President Obama had to say about that last night. So let's take a listen.
Now, today, women make up about half our workforce, but they still make 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. That is wrong. And in 2014, it's an embarrassment. Women deserve equal pay for equal work. She deserves to have a baby without sacrificing her job. A mother deserves a day off to care for a sick child or a sick parent without running into hardship. And you know what? A father does too. It is time to do away with workplace policies that belong in a Mad Men episode. This year, let's all come together, Congress, the White House, businesses from Wall Street to Main Street, to give every woman the opportunity she deserves, because I believe when women succeed, America succeeds.
That was President Barack Obama during the State of the Union address last night saying, I believe when women succeed, America succeeds. And Anne Hedgepeth, I'm guessing that at least that part of it you would agree with.
Absolutely. And really what he was highlighting in that portion of the speech is that there are many public policies that can support families and specifically women in being both caregivers and valuable employees. And part of that is equal pay. I couldn't agree more. It is embarrassing that women on average are making 77 cents on the dollar to men's pay. And I would add that AEW research has shown that even when you compare apples to apples, women and men who are almost identically situated, the gap's a little smaller, but it's still there. It's really a prevalent problem, and we are so glad to see it highlighted in a place like the State of the Union speech.
But the interesting thing, I think, is that, you know, that was about a minute and 20 seconds talking about equal pay, but there are other, even other aspects of that issue that did not come up. For instance, you know, you have the Paycheck Fairness Act was not mentioned, Equal Rights Amendment, Lilly Ledbetter. I mean, there are, talk about those a little bit and how maybe that part of the State of the Union and federal priorities could be more robust on those issues.
I think that's really true because that portion of the speech, it gave, I think, some energy behind the problems, but it didn't identify some of the specific solutions that many of us have been calling for a while. First, starting with the fact that the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which was passed 5 years ago today, or signed into law 5 years ago today, was a great first step to keeping courtroom doors open and helping women who are moving forward with discrimination lawsuits. But it isn't making a huge shift in some of these problems, and we know there are next things we can do. The Paycheck Fairness Act would deal with several other aspects of pay equity issues. The Equal Rights Amendment is obviously something many of us have been talking about for a long time. There are paid sick days and paid family leave bills out there. There's also an opportunity for the president to lead and to specifically sign an executive order barring retaliation for federal contractors or employees of federal contractors who share information about the salaries they earn. That information can be really important for folks to figure out sort of the lay of the land at their workplace and know whether there's discrimination going on. And without the information of the threat of being fired, I think it really stifles our ability to, you know, to have more equal workplaces and to pay women equally. And those specific solutions really weren't raised in talking about some of the things that we know that are going on.
And it's interesting that an executive order could do that because President Obama also talked about an executive order to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 for federal contractors as well. So a similar kind of action could also benefit women more specifically.
Absolutely. And I don't want to gloss over the fact that the work being done around the minimum wage really helps a lot of workers, a majority of minimum wage workers, that I think about two-thirds are women. So that's a great thing to be doing as well. But in a time where we're talking about things that the president can lead on because Congress is gridlocked, another part of that puzzle is for workers to be able to discuss their salaries and make progress towards ending discrimination.
On your State of the Union bingo cards that the AAUW put together, you have squares for both equal pay and fair pay. Can you talk a little bit about how those differ?
Yeah, you know, I think that that was one, identifying the fact that folks might be talking about things in a couple different ways. But it was also getting at some of the various different approaches we can take to combating the gender pay gap, both, you know, enforcing current laws and dealing with sort of fairness in the workplace and where discrimination is going on, and then also dealing with sort of more long-term ensuring that we maybe do more to end, I think, the notion of pink-collar jobs, moving women into occupations where they pay better, where they earn more equal wages to men, equal pay for equal work. And I think that those two sort of approaches are important when we talk about the full spectrum of women working and the types of jobs they have, as well as the climate in those jobs at different workplaces.
We are talking with Anne Hedgepeth. She is Government Relations Manager for the American Association of University Women. And we're taking a look at last night's State of the Union address through a lens of women's issues. And we would enjoy having you join the conversation as well. You can call 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Kathleen Dunn this week. What did you think of the State of the Union address in relation to women's issues? Do you see some issues as still today in 2014, specifically women's concerns, or do you feel that there are larger issues that are more important for women than those that might be identified strictly as women's issues? We'd love to have you join in the conversation. And I thought it was interesting in that clip that we just listened to, President Obama does talk about equal pay for equal work, and then he goes on to say and that a woman should not be worried about losing her job because she takes time to care for a child or for a parent. And as I was listening, I thought, why are we saying that about women? It is a very traditional caregiving role for women, but certainly, you know, there has been and probably should be even more sharing of those responsibilities. And then it almost sounded like an afterthought when he said, and a father too. Do you think that that was enough to kind of say that this is something that affects everyone? Certainly maybe women more, but that shouldn't necessarily be the case.
You know, I think that really is a tough balance, and you definitely hit on something that I think constantly comes up, which is that we can write gender-neutral policies like the Family and Medical Leave Act actually provides that any employee, not just women, have access to job-protected but unpaid leave for major medical events and the birth and adoption of a new child. But at the end of the day, we do also know and we see that women are often on the hook for caregiving responsibilities and are juggling that. It would be wonderful to see the president lead on how these things impact families and how we can encourage shared caregiving responsibility, equity in the home as well in the workplace, how we can have policies that support families no matter their structure. It's great to see the issues, period, come up, and I think there is more we can do to make sure that we're talking about all families, all caregiving needs, and the types of policies that can really impact and improve the economic security of families. So it's a little, I think, cup half full is that it's great to see that these policies are being spotlighted or in the State of the Union speech for sure.
And the president got quite a laugh when he referred to, you know, we have to stop looking like it's a Mad Men episode, of course, you know, referring to several decades ago, very traditional gender roles and responsibilities. But obviously we have made some progress. But when you do look at things like low wage work and caregiving and often female-dominated professions being paid less than male-dominated professions, and it would appear that the main reason is that they're female-dominated. Have we gotten as far from those Mad Men days as the calendar would seem to indicate we should have?
I know. That line was a good one. I actually saw today that it may have been sort of one of the peak lines that on Twitter with a lot of people chiming in and sharing it and agreeing because I think in principle, I think we all would like to move towards some progress on those issues. But you're absolutely right. There are, I think, some impacts of our current economy that women feel particularly. And one of the things, you know, AEW talks about is that there are these policies that we can, you know, work on around pay equity, around access to paid sick days and paid leave. But we can also talk about moving women into underrepresented occupations, getting them the training they need. And that's really a good segue to something else that came up in the State of the Union that wasn't flagged as a women's issue, is the need to get more people people trained for the jobs that we have available or that will be coming available. And some of those are underrepresented when it comes to women being the employees in those jobs. That's a place where maybe our movement from the Mad Men era hasn't happened quite as much as we'd like to imagine. And we might be able to do more if we really focused on getting folks into those occupations, into those particular programs, and making sure that they are the employees we're looking for.
Well, and this wasn't specifically at that point in the speech, but President Obama, it was actually in the part where he talked about how the son of a barkeep could become Speaker of the House, referring to John mm-hmm. Boehner, referring to himself as, you know, the son of a single mom can become President of the United States. But he also pointed out that the daughter of a factory worker could grow up to run that car company. And so there was pointing to the fact that women are making some inroads, at least in, you know, getting through the glass ceiling that's been historically in place.
I think so. And those, I think be saying that and pointing out those achievements is incredibly important. And then sort of, you know, putting our money where our mouth is and making sure that we are supporting, moving, using our resources to getting people into those jobs and finding those opportunities is also really important as well.
We are talking with Anne Hedgepeth. She is Government Relations Manager for the American Association of University Women. We're taking a look at the State of the Union address from last night, but looking at it specifically through the lens of women's issues. And we'd encourage you to join us. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at K Dunn Show. And you can also post on our Facebook page. That's The Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we are talking with Anne Hedgepeth. She's Government Relations Manager at the American Association of University Women. And we are talking about last night's State of the Union address, especially through the lens of women's issues. And of course, when you talk women's issues, women's health is almost always at the top of the list, and often of great concern for women, for the parents of girls, for caretakers, for women parents. And let's take a listen to a short clip from the State of the Union address that looked at women's health issues.
Because of this law, no American, none, zero, can ever again be dropped or denied coverage for a pre-existing condition like asthma or back pain or cancer. No woman can ever be charged more just because she's a woman. And we did all this while adding years to Medicare's finances, keeping Medicare premiums flat, and lowering prescription costs for millions of seniors.
That was President Barack Obama, part of the State of the Union address last night, talking about women's health care, that health care should not and cannot anymore cost women more than their male counterparts. And, you know, using that as a platform for support of the Affordable Care Act. And Hedgepeth, what kind of changes has President Obama, through the Affordable Care Act, made in access to and the cost of women's health care?
And I think there's some really important things that have changed for women in particular as we have talked about what does healthcare mean and the Affordable Care Act getting across the finish line and now seeing women enroll in some of these health plans. Obviously, he identified, I think, two key ones that are really key issues that are very important. You know, eliminating those barriers for folks with pre-existing conditions. I think, you know, anecdotally, we are seeing such a wide range of pre-existing conditions that folks are having trouble accessing health insurance because of. But then also that aspect, that gender rating that was taking place, where women were being charged more simply for being a woman. That's a big shift, and it means that more women can afford their health care now and their health insurance, and it means that more women are able to sign up for health insurance. I'd also mention that what our conversation about what does preventive care really look like has hit on some things that I think had been left out for a while, and specifically it's women's access to preventive health care, including preventive reproductive health care, have meant that more options that improve women's health in the long run are available now because they are more affordable for more women.
You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, talking about the State of the Union address, specifically about women's issues with Anne Hedgepeth, Government Relations Manager for the AAUW. And Anne, you just touched on reproductive health and certainly contraception and abortion rights fall under that category. And as far as I remember, neither of those words or terms was actually specifically used.
I know, and I think that's true and probably reflects how they've become a very, I think, hot-button issue as the Affordable Care Act has been implemented and continue to get a lot of attention in Congress. You know, what does preventive health care look like? Does it include contraceptives, which really can make a big difference for women in terms of preventing cancer and, you know, control of their economic security and access so much more health care generally through the Affordable Care Act. But no, those specific topics weren't hit on. And that might have felt like a third rail, maybe. But at the end of the day, I think we all know that ensuring that women have access to health insurance and health insurance that covers the full range of options that they need is key to their economic security, to their health and well-being. And so talking about the Affordable Care Act and talking about women's health generally is really important, too.
We'll talk more specifically about the Republican response later, but I did notice that when President Obama was talking about health care and the Affordable Care Act, he used the example of a woman who was able to sign up for health care on January 1st. I believe on January 3rd, she started having a sharp pain, and I think a couple days after that, she ended up having emergency surgery, and she said that without the Affordable Care Act and that coverage that she was able to access, that would have meant bankruptcy. In the Republican response, after a continuing criticism of the Affordable Care Act, Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers also referred to a woman, this time a woman who saw her premiums go up, I believe, by $700 or $2,700. The point was that the Affordable Care Act was not working well for her and was actually hurting her. Do you think there's any significance that each of them used a woman accessing health care as their example?
You know, I think that's an interesting question. At the end of the day, I think stories similar to both of those have been told by a lot of public officials, by the media, and ultimately they highlight that there are lots of, I think, different experiences with the way that the Affordable Care Act is sought by individuals, and that ultimately getting better health insurance to more people is, you know, has a lot of nuance to it. Having, you know, both of their examples be women, I think it's great that we're talking about the type of health care that women need and that the type of health insurance that they need and what those things look like and different women's experiences with that. And so I think it's a positive sign that we're identifying the way that women in particular are using this access to health insurance and what their experience looks like when they do.
And we do have a caller, Janine from Bark River, Michigan, on the line. Hi, Janine.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to share a thought I had as I was listening about the tendency towards women being the healthcare providers or the caregivers and filling that role. And this income disparity, I think, contributes to that because if she is in the position of having a lower wage, she is more likely to be the one to sacrifice that income versus her husband or partner, you know, taking on that role because it's easier to sacrifice the lower income. And I just wondered your thoughts on that, if anybody had ever looked at it as, you know, sort of a contributing factor to if we can increase the wage of women, that would contribute to men filling more of those roles or feeling freer to fill that role more often?
That's a great question, Janine. Anne?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Families really, I think, struggle with this every day about, you know, whether one salary is enough, whether they need two salaries to get by. There are so many, I think, single-headed households and women in single-headed households. And that pay disparity we see, the gender pay gap, is impacting each one of those families. The decision-making around caregiving responsibilities and, you know, is it better to have two incomes? Can we afford child care, which remains, I think, very expensive for many families? And women working but being paid a lower wage definitely adds, I think, to the difficulty so many families have making ends meet every month. And I think that is something that we hear time and time again. Just today, Lilly Ledbetter was speaking on Capitol Hill with some representatives. And one of the things she talks about is that the reason she was going to, that she started working with Goodyear was because even with her husband working, they still had so many costs with their kids growing up, with things that they were trying to accomplish, that the second salary was really important to them. And so even when it's not about caregiving decisions, it has long-term impacts on families' economic security. Not to mention either the lower wage or the decision not to be working has a long-term impact on a woman's retirement security and on her contributions to her, you know, private retirement investments, as well as her opportunity to access Social Security, reflecting her earnings over her lifetime. I think those things all really, compound what we see, what happens because of the gender pay gap.
Thanks for that call, Janine. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in this week for Kathleen Dunn, and today we are talking about last night's State of the Union address, specifically focusing on women's issues with Anne Hedgepeth. She is Government Relations Manager for the American Association of University Women. And actually, Anne, why don't we take a moment for you to talk about what the AAUW does and its history, because, you know, it sounds like a name that was created a long time ago. It sounds, you would think it's a very kind of staid organization, but it's really not.
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to tell you all a little bit more about AUW. And yes, we were founded a while ago, over 130 years ago, by women who were going to college at a time where that was less common. And I think they identified common goals that they could work together on, moving more women into higher education, and then really transformed that mission into the research, the philanthropy, and the advocacy that AUW does now. We help many women pursue graduate education through fellowships that we provide. We do research every year on, I think, topics that really interest women that span from things like women in the workplace to in education. And then we also do a fair amount of advocacy, which is how you're hearing from me today. We have about 170,000 members and supporters across the country, and some of them are a part of local branches, so AUW members in your town or state organizations near you who are working both on the federal level but also in their communities and at the state and local level on policies, on different projects, I think, that have a positive impact on their local area. We also have about 800 college and university partners. So these are schools that we work with and we partner with to make sure that they have resources on the work AUW is doing and that their students can be plugged into our network. It's a great group, a great movement to be a part of, I think, because you can be sort of contributing and talking about so many of the things that are important to women, but also to families, to everyone today. And then also seeing ways that we can help move things along through the philanthropy, the research, the other work that the organization does across the country.
Thanks for that summary, Anne. And one of the squares on the bingo card that the AAUW put together for the State of the Union was about sexual assault. And at the White House last Wednesday, President Obama's Council on Women and Girls presented its report on sexual assault, called it an epidemic, especially on college campuses. And the report claims that 1 in 5 women will experience a sexual assault in their lifetimes. Let me repeat that. It claims that 1 in 5 women will experience a sexual assault in their lifetimes, and that only 12% of victims will actually report it. And was there anything, were you hoping to hear about that in the speech?
I have to say, first of all, that the announcement last week was outstanding. To hear the White House identify the need to address this issue, it's something they've led on before. They were supporters of the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act and some of the college campus-oriented policies in there, as well as more broadly about the work that VAWA does to work with survivors and provide the resources and information they need. And so standing up for that last week and putting some resources through a task force towards solving this problem is incredibly important. Yes, I think there was room to talk about it last night. I also know that the president, spoke very eloquently about those who serve our veterans, but we also know that sexual assault in the military remains a problem. And so there were opportunities that might have been missed in the speech, but I see a lot of room for the administration to continue to do positive work, and the fact that they've invited input and have said that in 90 days they'll have an action plan to do some work around sexual assault, mm-hmm. particularly on campus through that task force. Those are really positive announcements that we are, I think excited and really appreciate their leadership on.
I do have to say that in State of the Union addresses, and last night was certainly no exception, the times where you actually get members of each party on their feet clapping and showing at least some veneer of unity is when you talk about supporting veterans.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's not important to say, but it's also, it's a pretty easy applause line. And I would think there was a very moving story told about a soldier who was there in the hall who had survived just grievous injuries in Afghanistan, I believe it was, the longest, most sustained applause of the evening was for him and his struggle and his service. It seems like it would have been easy and not at all risky to bring up the really serious issue that women in the military are facing, sexual assault, having huge issues of the chain of command, having power to derail their complaints or just not being responsive. It does seem disappointing that part, that larger and larger part of our military's issue was not addressed directly.
I completely agree, and there are, I think, important parts of the State of the Union where we do come together and talk about progress and thank our veterans and think about where we've been and where we can still go. And I think that path forward is something that, there was an opening, and we hope that, the action will still be there, even if it didn't get a spotlight in the speech last night. I know the Senate has committed to taking some votes around some proposals specifically addressing military sexual assault. And so hopefully that will help us, and Congress will step up and keep that ball rolling and make sure that we're, paying attention to sort of all of the needs of all of our veterans and really respecting and thanking them for their service in the way that we know we can, which is through justice and through the, support that they need and the services they need.
I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today we are taking a look at last night's State of the Union address, looking most closely at women's issues, what was in the speech, what wasn't, and what you were hoping to hear. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or tweet us at the K Dunn Show or post on the Facebook page. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll be back with Anne Hedgepeth from the American Association of University Women in just a moment. Now we are talking about last night's State of the Union address and looking at it through the perspective of women's issues. We're talking with Anne Hedgepeth. She is Government Relations Manager with the AAUW. And let's talk a little bit about the Republican response. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State delivered the official Republican response. That's the first Republican woman since Olympia Snow in 2000. And John Boehner, when he tweeted the announcement that she would be the one giving the response, said that she's the highest ranking Republican woman in Congress. But he said, more importantly, she's a mom and she does have three children. She made a point of saying last night that when she entered Congress, she was single, and now she is married and has three children. And she also made a point of talking about the eldest, her son, Cole, who was born with Down syndrome. Why do you think John Boehner decided to choose Kathy McMorris Rogers? First, her individually, and secondly, was it an intentional choice to put a woman in that position?
You know, I think that something that I think hopefully, actually, that the Republican Party is realizing is that they have, you know, great spokespeople and someone like Representative Morris Rogers, who is so high ranking in their leadership, can really deliver a message reflecting their priorities from the perspective of, you know, of someone who has perhaps experience with some of the things that were being addressed in the State of the Union, or even some ideas about ways that that party would like to move forward on some of these policies. You know, I don't think that it doesn't necessarily follow that, you know, by being a woman that there are, you know, some singular set of policies that are just women's policies. We've been talking already today about how so many of the things that were highlighted are about families, are about economic security, are about education. And so, you know, having a woman talk about these things is great. Women in office, you know, I think that's wonderful news. And women in leadership is really important. And so those things, I think, are reflected in having her deliver that response, which talked a lot about some of the GOP's ideas around these types of policies.
There was a quote from former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman, who said, it's hard for me to phrase this politely. Sometimes Republicans think that just putting a woman up front means somehow that women are going to feel good about the party. It is not about the messenger. It's about the message. And that was something that she told the Los Angeles Times yesterday. And she goes on, and until we figure that one out, while it's nice that we have a woman as a spokesperson, if the message itself doesn't get changed a bit, it's not going to work. Would you agree with Christy Todd Whitman?
I think that's true, and something that we've learned and we've seen in polling is that there are issues like pay equity that are bipartisan issues for women and for men. And I think it doesn't necessarily matter the messenger on those issues. People are interested in seeing them addressed, and there are, I think, proposals, AUW-supported proposals out there to do that. And so I think I would agree that the message is really what matters, and these policies are really what matters. And we're always going to be glad to see more women in leadership roles and more women speaking and being a part of the public policymaking process. But at the end of the day, there are also, I think, some good policies that we want to see advanced and we know would make a difference for families and for women. And those are really what need to be at the core of these messages in order to reach women and constituents to, I think, make a change and to have them respond.
Well, and I'm guessing perhaps that Christine Todd Whitman was referring at least in some way to the comments made last week at the Republican National Committee meetings. Mike Huckabee said that Democrats are insulting to women and said that they're telling them, quote, they are helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in and providing them a prescription each month for birth control because they cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of government. And certainly he was not attacked just by Democrats for that. There were a lot of Republicans that were saying, whoa, that doesn't speak for the party as a whole.
Yeah, and I think I would agree. I find comments like that really troubling. And yesterday, obviously, there was an interesting contrast. You saw the House of Representatives take up a bill that was, I think, a really troublesome marker on limiting access to reproductive health care, and specifically to abortion, and then contrasting that with saying that, you know, women should be able to choose their health care. It just doesn't seem to mesh, and I don't think that's the experience that a lot of women have, and I don't think that that's necessarily the role they want their government to play.
We are talking with Anne Hedgepeth of the American Association of University Women. She is the government relations manager. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn, talking about the State of the Union address and women's issues in the United States. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Going back to the State of the Union bingo that the AAUW put out, and people can see that on the AAUW website, or you can get that link through the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, and feel free to share that with friends. A lot of friends, when I told them about it, thought it was a great idea, and, you know, putting a little fun into serious political issues. One of the topics that you have as a square on the bingo card is STEM, which deals with science and technology and math education. Why is that something that's important to be thinking about through the lens of women and girls?
You know, I think what we know and AAUW research shows is that we, you know, I think are going to be demanding so many workers in STEM fields now and in the future, and yet we don't see women participating even from earliest stages of our education in some of those fields as much as boys. And so figuring out ways to improve educational opportunities and training around science, technology, engineering, and math for women and girls can really make a difference, I think, in the long run, in the types of jobs that they pursue, in the type of skills that they have that they can bring to their jobs. And we know the interest is there. This morning at the White House, they were talking about the state of STEM and talking about a lot of the different types of opportunities that are out there. And I think that there were a lot of future female scientists in the room who were asking questions and contributing to the conversation. And anything we can do, I think, to make sure that our education system helps move women and girls into those fields or provides the equal opportunity is really important. Those careers, a lot of science, technology, engineering, and math careers, I think I mentioned early, are more likely to pay women and men equally, and that sounds like a great opportunity as we continue to work towards more equal opportunities for men and women in our workforce.
Let's go back to the phones and Naomi and Madison. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, great program. Thanks for having this discussion.
Thank you.
I am living in Madison. I'm college educated. I was for 7 years the breadwinner in my family with my husband and I, but now I'm a stay-at-home mom with my 10-month-old son, while my husband is the only breadwinner. And I think something we miss when we talk about women's issues often is, you touched on it a little bit early, on how they're men's issues too. I think, you know, we talk a lot about the income disparity and earning potential hit that women take when they go back into the workforce after having children or after taking time off to care for a parent. But something that's come up in discussions between my husband and I, you know, as we were deciding how to organize our family, is that, you know, he's missing out on childcare and being able to spend every day with our son. You know, we talk about how women aren't up there in that top CEO position. I've read a couple of New York Times articles where they talked about, you know, women who go to Harvard and get the business degrees there still don't go into those top echelon jobs. But we hear about how those top echelon jobs really cause a lot of depression and anxiety, and we hear about how CEOs actually have a very high rate of depression. And so I wonder if we need to broaden the discussion and not just talk about, you know, how women don't make it to those top echelons, but why are women more empowered to say, I don't want that level of stress. You know, what I find rewarding in my life is not going towards that area, and really talk about why men don't feel empowered to stay home with their children and take on those roles, and why they don't feel empowered to say, no, I am not going to aim for a CEO. That doesn't make me happy. I think if we had the broader conversation where we didn't just talk about wage potential and make, you know, economic stability our bottom line, we could have a more complete and inclusive conversation that everybody would come to the table for.
Thanks so much for that call, Naomi. And Anne, would you like to comment on that?
I think I would just agree and say that, you know, sometimes we obviously want to break down some of the barriers and, frankly, the maybe disincentives for that type of balance by finding some public policies that can help us with creating more equal workplaces. I think those can really help to contribute to the bigger cultural shift that needs to also happen, which I think is what we were just talking about, right? Which is, you know, making sure that everyone can come to the table and can weigh all of these options and do what's best for their family, their individual career goals and family goals, instead of feeling like they're sort of forced or channeled into particular things because of our structures, our policies, whatever it may be. So, you know, I think it was very well said to point out that that's, you know, part of the equation and that there's a much bigger picture about what we're talking about here, too.
Thanks for that call, Naomi. And I think it's a good follow-up to what Naomi said, that some of the issues that the AAUW highlighted on the State of the Union bingo cards are not necessarily at face value or at first glance things that you would identify as traditional women's issues. You have both immigration and the DREAM Act on that list. Why was the AAUW, or I'm guessing maybe you personally, Anne, why were you hoping to hear President Obama talk about immigration and specifically the DREAM Act?
Yeah, I think I would point out two things. I mean, first of all, that there's some things that were part of the bingo card that we're talking about where AUW has come to talking about the issue with a lens of how this would impact women. But the policy solutions impact so many people. And with immigration reform, for example, many of the folks we're talking about who will be impacted are women. And we want to spotlight their stories and some of the particular needs they may have during that conversation. But yes, helping dreamers and talking about a path to legal status and figuring out ways to support immigrants really helps so many people. Also, AUW is a mission-driven organization, and we have for a long time worked around things that are focused on creating a more equitable and more just society more broadly, beyond just the impact on women specifically, but knowing that when, you know, we all succeed, that really helps everyone, all of our families, our economy to grow, and that those are bigger priorities too. And so we can lend a women's voice, really, I think, to things that a lot of people are chiming in on, and that's why those things can be so important.
Let's take a quick call from Camille in Madison before we run out of time here. Hi, Camille.
Hi. I'm going to show my age by my question, but when Tommy Thompson was first elected governor, he wanted to get together at the residence with women, and we called the session, Every Issue is a Woman's Issue, rather than just talking about. But my question is to our guest is, I participated many years ago in AAUW's first Take Your Daughters to Work Day. And that was really grassroots. Everybody could do it. And I'm wondering if AAUW has any current issues to take the bingo card or whatever to grassroots people, local women like me, to spread the word.
Thanks for that call, Camille. Anne?
That's a great question. And I will also say I went on a few
take your daughter to work day as a daughter and had a great time. And it's a great way to spotlight things that are going on. I think I would point folks to fightforfairpay.org, which is O-R-G. Sorry, I should have been more clear, which is sort of a hub for some of the things that AEW is identifying are good ways that grassroots can work to advance some of the things that we're talking about here. Writing a letter to the editor, gathering folks, reaching out to your elected officials, both on the local, state, and federal level. It's a good place to look for some of those ideas and resources, and also gives you a way to connect with us if you have questions or ideas. So the URL, again, is fightforfairpay.org.
And fight for is F-O-R, or is it the number four?
F-O-R.
Great. Fightforfairpay.org. Well, thanks for that call, Camille. And thank you so much, Anne Hedgepeth, for joining us today. It was a great conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Anne Hedgepeth is the Government Relations Manager for the American Association of University Women. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about the phrase the mentally ill and how we can change it to be both more accurate and more helpful for those living with a diagnosis of mental illness. Thanks so much to KP Whaley and Dave Potraz for production assistance. Please stay tuned. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn.